Scarcely 12 hours after the first known human contact with the Andromeda strain was made at Piedmont, Burton and Stone arrived in the town. Except for a gentle wind that whined softly through the empty houses, it was deathly silent. Bodies lay everywhere, heaped and flung across the ground in attitudes of frozen surprise. But there was no sound. No reassuring rumble of an automobile engine, no barking dog, no shouting children. For a long time, the men said nothing, but stood in the street, looking about them, feeling the wind tug at their oversized suits. Finally, Stone said, "Why are they all outside in the street? If this was a disease that arrived at night, most of the people would be indoors."
"Not only that," Burton said, "they're mostly wearing pajamas. It was a cold night last night. You'd think they had to stop to put on a jacket or a raincoat, something to keep warm."
"Maybe they were in a hurry."
"To do what?"
Burton said. "To see something," Stone said with a helpless shrug.
Burton bent over the first body they came to. "Odd," he said. "Look at the way this fellow is clutching his chest. Quite a few of them are doing that."
Looking at the body, Stone saw that the hands of many were pressed to their chests, some flat, some clawing. They didn't seem to be in pain. Their faces are quite peaceful.
"Almost astonished, in fact. These people look cut down, caught in mid-stride."
"Coronary?" Stone said.
"Doubt it. They should grimace. It's painful. But somehow I think these people died a painless death, which means they are clutching their chest because they couldn't breathe," Stone said.
Burton was beginning to regain his composure now after the initial shock of the town. He was beginning to think clearly. They walked up to the van, standing in the middle of the street, its lights still shining weakly. Stone reached in to turn off the lights. He pushed the stiff body of the driver back from the wheel and read the name on the breast pocket of the parka. "Sean." "Let's go find the satellite," Stone said. "That's our first job. We can worry later about..." He stopped. He was looking at the face of Sean, who had obviously pitched forward hard onto the steering wheel at the moment of death. There was a large, arc-shaped cut across his face, shattering the bridge of his nose and tearing the skin. "I don't get it."
"Get what?"
"This injury. Look at it."
"Very clean. Remarkably clean, in fact. Practically no bleeding."
Then Burton realized.
"Broken capillaries, shattered bone, torn scalp veins. It should bleed like hell."
"Yes," Stone said. "It should. And look at the other bodies. Even where the vultures have chewed at the flesh, no bleeding." It was 15 minutes before they were able to locate the satellite on the outskirts of the town. They pulled up before a plain, single-story wood-frame house. A sign creaked in the wind. "Dr. Alan Benedict."
"Might have known," Stone said. "They'd take it to the doctor."
The two men climbed out of the van and went up to the house. The front door was open, hanging in the breeze. They entered the living room and found it empty. Turning right, they came to the doctor's office. Benedict was there, a pudgy, white-haired man. He was seated before his desk, with several textbooks laid open. Along one wall were bottles, syringes, pictures of his family, and several others showing men in combat uniforms. And then they saw the satellite. It was upright, a sleek, polished cone 3 feet high, and its edges had been cracked and seared from the heat of re-entry. It had been opened crudely, apparently with the help of a pair of pliers and chisel that lay on the floor next to the capsule.
"A bastard opened it," Stone said. "Stupid son of a bitch." "How was he to know?"
"He might have asked somebody," Stone said. He bent over the satellite and closed the gaping triangular hatch. Burton leaned over the body.
"Come on," he said to Stone. "Help me."
"Do what?"
"Strip him down."
"Why?"
"I want to check the lividity."
There was no dependent lividity. Normally, after a person died, blood seeped to the lowest points, drawn down by gravity. A person who died in bed had a purple back from accumulated blood, but Benedict, who had died sitting up, had no blood in the tissue of his buttocks or thighs, or in his elbows, which had rested on the arms of the chair. Holding the scalpel carefully, Burton drew the blade along the skin of the inner wrist, just behind the thumb. The skin pulled back from the wound, which was completely bloodless. He exposed fat and subcutaneous tissue. There was no bleeding. Amazing. He cut deeper. There was still no bleeding from the incision. Suddenly, abruptly, he struck a vessel. Crumbling red-black material fell out onto the floor.
I'll be damned, Stone said.
Clotted solid, Burton said.
Incredible.
They began to search the other houses in town. One contained a man, his wife, and their young daughter, all sitting around the dinner table. They had apparently been relaxed and happy, and none of them had time to push back their chairs from the table. They remained frozen in attitudes of congeniality, smiling at each other across the plates of now-rotting food and flies. Roy O. Thompson lived alone. From his greasy coveralls, they assumed he ran the town gas station. Roy had apparently filled his bathtub with water, then knelt down, stuck his head in, and held it there until he died. When they found him, his body was rigid, holding himself under the surface of the water. There was no one else around and no sign of struggle.
Impossible, Stone said. No one can commit suicide that way.